the train that takes me away. Not gonna see you for a while.
Why?
It's an away game. It's an away game.
I'm coming home soon.
G'day, I'm Irk, and welcome to episode number 2 of Irk to the Penalty Box. This is my personal podcast talking about the game of ice hockey in Australia and beyond after I discovered the game in January 2014. Hope you enjoyed the last episode, episode number 1. Episode number 1, you can, of course, access that via irktothepenaltybox.com. This week's episode will continue on from episode number 1. It will be a continuation of the interview between myself and Sean the Pipes Norris, who is the arena announcer for the Portland Winterhawks in the Western Hockey League in North America. It was a very interesting chat, as you would have heard on last week's episode, and coming up on this week's episode, we indeed will continue the conversation, get more into the mechanics of announcing, what it is like to be the announcer, and sometimes what happens when things aren't necessarily going your way. Also on this episode, I'll tell you about a couple of podcasts that are dealing with the Australian Ice Hockey League, which I am now involved in, and on the coming weeks you will hear more about the Australian Ice Hockey League, but as this episode is released, I'm actually overseas at the moment. If you would like further information to listen to previous episodes or to subscribe or indeed to read some articles that I have written for Hewlett Sports, you can go to irktothepenaltybox.com for more information there, and interact with me on the social networks as well, Twitter and Facebook. There are links on the show notes at irktothepenaltybox.com. Anywho, it is time for the game to start from home ice here in Western Sydney. Here in Australia, we're going overseas now, over to Portland, Oregon, where this interview was recorded in January 2014. But before we start, please be upstanding and remove your caps for the American National Anthem as performed by a US Army band. Now it's time for the start of the first period, and myself and Sean, we are talking about who are the Winterhawks and who are the Winterhawks fans.
The Winterhawks, partly because of the age of our players, from 16 to 20, partly because it's not a demographic that's really covered in these other major sports. And it is it's a viable marketing demographic. The Winterhawks aim at families. They aim it at families who have kids who are age, 3 all the way up into teenage kids. And so, So you're really looking at creating a more family-friendly environment, and which means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But it definitely means not encouraging people to stand up en masse drunkenly singing songs about your team kind of thing. Which, like I said, we would love to have that kind of fan support. So we would just want to do it in a way that was going to be more family friendly, I guess. So the Winterhawks, they really they put a lot of their focus on kids and on building youth programs in the community, and they do a lot of different charitable things. Our biggest game of the year every year during the regular season is called the Teddy Bear Toss, and what happens is people just know now because they've been doing it for so many years. It's been done, I think, 18 years in a row here or something like that, where you're encouraged to bring one or more teddy bears or other stuffed animals, stuffed creatures, whatever, to the game. And when the Winterhawks score their first goal, then everyone throws those animals out onto the ice, the stuffed bears and things. And it just rains these plush, and if you're sitting in the lower sections, you get pelted on the head, but they're stuffed animals, so it doesn't hurt. You just pick it up and you chuck it a little further, until it gets out on the ice. And it's really cool. You can definitely look up Teddy Bear Toss video online. Look up Teddy Bear Toss Winterhawks and you'll see what it looks like in our stadium. And usually, the capacity of both of our buildings is right around 11,000 people. It is, we always have at least 11,000 stuffed animals thrown out on the ice. Usually it's more than the number of people that are there. A lot of people bring, some people bring 10 or 15 of them, and just start chucking once we score our first goal.
So compared to the equivalent sort of competition for a comparable sort of sport in Australia, we're not talking about having a stadium just full of family and friends and loved ones. There are genuine Winterhawks fans who have nothing to do with the team.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, because the Winterhawks players are all from somewhere else, none of them are from Portland. Even the American ones,
Where have I heard that before?
Right, exactly. They're just like everyone else in Portland. They're from somewhere else. Because of that, the team is really responsible through marketing and through all the different ways that it builds its fan support to build this fan support without really having a lot of like players' families and things. So it's not like going and watching your kid's soccer game at the park, where you've got the families bringing the orange slices after the game or whatever. You really do have to build it from the ground up. And there are a lot of people who did grow up in Portland, actually, who have been fans for years and years. But it's mostly new fans. It's mostly people that we've drawn in the last few years with kind of this new, exciting environment that's been created, that I really am honored to be a part of.
That place waits for me.
How are the boys doing?
Oh, the boys are great. We have, depending on who you talk to, we have either the best team in the league or maybe the second or third best team in the league. We won a league title last year, a league championship title. I actually have, it was the first time we had won one in 15 years. And I was given a big, really big championship ring a few weeks ago that is just amazing, that the team had made for all of the players and the team personnel. So we won a title. which is the pinnacle of our league, the Western Hockey League. We came in second in the entire Canadian Hockey League last year. We played in that final as well and ended up losing, but it was very close. So basically, at this level, we have the, you could say, the second best team in all of North America. And in our own league, this year again, definitely, if not the best, one of the top two or three teams. They're really good.
So we should talk about the games on the weekend.
Definitely.
We started out on Friday night.
Right. So Friday night was against the Moose Jaw Warriors. Moose Jaw, like I said, a little town over there in Alberta. We only play them once per year, so it alternates. We play them and they're in their building 1 year, and then we play them in our city the next year. So this was our year to have them here in Portland. Anytime you're playing against a team that you only see once during the year, you never really know what to expect. Moose Jaw came in, and our team has just started to gel in a really special way that I think is going to take us... We're going to have a very good chance to win another championship this year. We've got what's turning into a real juggernaut. And Moose Jaw, frankly, just didn't have the horses this year. They've got a good team, but I think it's one of those young building teams that's not got all the pieces put together quite just yet. And we ended up winning 8-2. The Winterhawks won 8-2, and it was very convincing, pretty much from the very beginning. I think we were up 3 or 4 goals to nothing.
Yeah, 4-0 at the end of the first period. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And for ice hockey, a 4-goal period is an explosion. And when you do that and the other team doesn't score at all, that's completely demoralizing. And you've virtually sealed the game, even though, I mean, someone can come back from that, but it's very rare. So it's definitely, our team came out convincingly. And it was pretty clear from the beginning that our team was going to come out victorious.
So we've had Friday night Winterhawks at the Veterans Coliseum. Saturday evening for me was roller derby.
Yes.
And then Sunday afternoon, we were back at the Veterans Center for our next game.
Exactly, exactly. And this is another special game that we only do once per year. The teddy bear toss that I mentioned earlier, to tie that in with what I was saying earlier, that actually is done for charity. All of those bears and things that get tossed on the ice end up going to children's charities and things. This is a game that is done pretty much because we have a very unique situation in Veterans Memorial Coliseum. It's one of, if not the only building in the United States of its size that has glassed walls, where it is an arena, but they can raise the curtains or lower the curtains, and sunlight actually can stream into the building through the glassed walls and out onto the ice. And not to say that some buildings do have glass along a certain side or something. They call the Coliseum the Glass Palace because it is just a cube of glass all the way around. So once per year we play a game that has a feel of kind of an outdoor pond hockey game, just because you've got the beautiful sun coming through. And in Portland, it's always a question of whether that's actually going to happen or not. But in this case, we did have beautiful sun on Sunday. And the game starts extra early so that it's just at the right time where the sun is just coming down into the building giving everything that beautiful, warm outside look, that glow. The team plays in that atmosphere. And then, of course, based on the time of the year, it ends up at the end of the game, it ends up being completely dark like it would be in a normal game, but you've still got the beautiful stars and things that you can see outside through the windows. So it's really unique in that sense. From a game perspective, the Winterhawks completely dominated. It was the best game that I've seen them play all year, on just the most complete game, as far as from the beginning of the game until the very end, they were dominant, and they did not let up, even after it was clear that it looked like they were going to roll to another big victory. They played one of their rivals, the Spokane Chiefs, a team that they face about 10 or 12 times a year. So it's a team they're very familiar with, and it's also a team that at the time of the game on Sunday was only two games behind us in the standings. So we had won 27 games, and they had won 25. So at this point in the season, that would usually indicate two teams that are fairly evenly matched. But in this case, it was a complete mismatch. And the Winterhawks came out and looked amazing and ended up winning 5-0.
So that was a shutout.
That was a shutout, absolutely. And it was actually the Winterhawks' first shutout of the season. And just a... It's definitely exciting if you're the team rooting for the one who scored all the goals in a shutout. Not necessarily as far as competitiveness is it exciting, but I think hockey's pretty exciting most of the time anyway, which is one of the things I like about it. Even when a team is way ahead, the action on the ice is happening so fast, and there's so much going on all the time. Plus, there's that brutal physicality at times. Even of just, you know, using your shoulder to slam someone up against the boards or something, which is a fairly normal occurrence. There's always something exciting and something to watch, even if the game itself is a blowout. So
you should tell people where I was sitting for that one.
Yes. Erk was sitting just behind and to the side slightly of... And pretty much did you have glass seats?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in the very front row, we call them seats at the glass. There's a plexiglass portion, as you can imagine, that keeps the puck from flying into the audience most of the time. He was sitting right up there against that plexiglass with the goalie just 6 feet or so in front of him, probably, the goal. In hockey, you play three periods rather than four. So this is what they call the attack zone in hockey, which is where the home team gets to shoot at that particular goal two out of those three periods. So,
and that's exactly where I was.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that is one of... I got a chance to see a Vancouver Canucks game from that same position up in Vancouver a few years ago. And that is, I think, one of the most exciting things, getting to see it right there. You get to see these guys slamming into each other and slamming each other up against the glass, and when they're fighting for the puck. And you get a sense of how, of their size and of their physical prowess, and also just the beauty and the speed of the game. I think when you're looking at it there at ice level, right at the glass, you see so much more and so many different things than you do if you're just looking at the overall perspective from a seat higher up.
So tell the listeners about the pre-game tour on Monday.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So
well, I should point out first that my original plan was to go with Quizmaster Polly for trivia, but unfortunately she was sick. So I'm like, Winterhawks game. Okay, let's do it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I was so glad that you got to come to that game on Monday too, because you'd gotten to see two games in the Coliseum, but the Moda Center is really the crown jewel of this city as far as arenas go. I mean, it's just by far nicer than anything else. And it's state-of-the-art. And so I was so glad that you were going to get to see a game in that building. Because to me, it's a completely different fan experience than it is in the older building. So after you had said that you were coming to the game, we talked and I suggested, why don't you just come at the time that I come to the game, which is 2 hours before the puck drops, which is the phrase that you were looking for before.
Yep, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So 2 hours before the puck drops, before the beginning of the game, that's when I show up for every game. And I usually have a pregame meeting, and then I just kind of prepare in the best way that I can, and then doors open 1 hour before the game, and that's when I pretty much have to be in my position. And I'll start making announcements just a few minutes after the doors open and things. We had about an hour or so where didn't really have anything specific planned. I knew that, and I asked Dirk if he wanted to come and perhaps kind of get the behind the scenes backstage tour, because especially in this building, where you've got this professional basketball team that, you know, is just incredible. Everything there is state of the art, and it's just this incredible professional environment. That's really the highest level of sports. So I figured that Eric would probably appreciate that. And we showed up a couple hours early and got to go walk around through kind of the bowels of the building, and got to go have some experiences that other fans never get to have. Some things that definitely will make some people jealous, like getting to sit in the driver's seat of the Zamboni and getting to walk out on the ice just an hour and a half or so before game time. Things like that.
Meeting the Rosebuds, the cheerleaders, and also Tomahawk.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Tomahawk is the Winterhawks mascot. Tom A. Hawk. Tom is his first name. Yeah. See what they did there? So, as you can imagine, the giant smiling bird hawk head with a big jersey on and tail feathers, and then the Rosebuds dance team is, at the time that they started 5 years ago, which was my first season, that was when we started making all of these changes with the team and the environment. They added the Rosebuds dance team, and at that time they were the only dance team that went out on the ice and actually danced on the ice, without putting out carpets or something like that. They actually are on the ice surface doing their dance routines, and these are dance routines like you would see it with cheerleaders at any other sporting event. And so they're all in sync and doing whatever it is the dancers do that we like to watch.
Because there's a lot of people, me included, have enough trouble walking on the ice, let alone what the Rosebuds do and what the Winterhawks do.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's this really, if you think about it at all, it's this really amazing thing that they are able to do, to be able to go out there on the ice and dance. And they're not on skates. They are, they're just in their dance shoes. Now, their shoes do have special ice spikes in them so that they get a little bit of traction when they're out there. But still, if you can imagine doing spins and twirls and throwing your body weight in all kinds of different directions, and it is really amazing watching them and what they're able to do on ice, just in shoes.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please rise for the Zamboni!
big hand for the Zambonis.
Where's the any key? I see Esk, Katarl, and Pigga. There doesn't seem to be any key. Oof. All this computer hacking is making me thirsty. I think I'll order a tab. Oh, no time for that now. The computer's starting.
Hello. You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
I wash my hand from the boss's blood. Then I say,
if you like your music loud, you can listen to IrkFM Metal Monday, a music podcast about heavy metal music, hosted by me each and every Monday on channelirk.com. IrkFM Metal Monday, if you like your music loud, don't hate me because I'm metal. Welcome to the first intermission of episode 2 of Irk to the Penalty Box. More information at irktothepenaltybox.com. All of our music is supplied by the Zambonis. Check out the Zambonis links on the show notes. As always, the Zambonis are a world famous band who theme all of their music on hockey, and I'm really, really grateful that they have allowed me to use their music, which is absolutely awesome. If you are listening to this podcast, I hope you are enjoying it. As you've been listening to on this episode and the previous one, I am only relatively new to the game of hockey and also the sport here in Australia. There are two podcasts that I will recommend that you listen to, and there will be links in the sidebar at Irk to the Diary, not Irk to the Diary Room, that's my other podcast, irktothepenaltybox.com. If you like game analysis, stats, recaps, previews, check out Pucker Up, That is with Chris, the host of Pucker Up. He is also the hockey editor for Hewitt Sports. And if you like your conversations more lighthearted, some more trivia, facts, stories, you know, just a couple of people at a pub talking hockey, also check out It's All Good All with our hosts, Miles and Saski. Absolutely awesome podcast. Both of these podcasts produced out of Melbourne. Two totally different podcasts. If you like your humour and hockey and lots of vague references for me because I don't necessarily know the history of the game and some of the teams who are in the competitions beforehand, overseas experiences or whatever, check both of them out. Both well worth listening to. And in time, when I return to Australia in July, this podcast indeed will go weekly, and it will feature some news from the Australian Ice Hockey League as well. Let's return to the start of the second period from Portland, Oregon.
You should fill the listeners in and tell them what a Zamboni is, just in case they don't know.
Oh, okay. So the Zamboni is the ice resurfacing machine. And in ice hockey, the Zamboni goes out and resurfaces the ice basically anytime players are not on it. So that would occur before the game and then during each of the intermissions. And if there's any kind of like overtime or a shootout, then the machine will run that time as well. Before that. And this is technology that came out, I want to say in the 1960s or maybe early 70s. The Zamboni company was the first one to develop one of these machines or to market one of them. And they were the only one to make them for a long time. So that name has become synonymous with this type of machine which goes out there. And resurfacing the ice is extremely important because of the speed and precision with which these players move. After one period of play, there's snow out on the ice, and there are all kinds of creases and crevices, and you can just imagine guys flying around on skates at, you know, 30 miles an hour. And then having to stop immediately because someone's hitting them or because they are choosing to stop. And ice snow just kind of showers, you know, from the ice at times. And so the ice ends up in really rough shape after every period. And this is what brings it back to a fresh, clean, beautiful glass surface.
Because unlike an ice rink like at the Lloyd Center, we're not just talking about people just leisurely skating around.
Exactly. These are guys who their ice skates are as sharp or sharper than any knife that you have in your kitchen drawer. They are out there using their physicality in every way possible to muscle the puck where they want it to go, ultimately into the goal. And there is a lot of physical play and muscling. And as you can imagine, anytime you're doing that on ice, you're going to have all kinds of things happen to that ice surface. So
that was cool. I got to sit in that. I didn't get to drive it, which I think Polly's grateful for.
Yes, absolutely. Quizmaster Polly and I think all of us actually are grateful that you might not be around anymore. I don't know. Unfortunately, we're not able to drive I've never driven a Zamboni either, for that matter. So, but it definitely is still something that people, they don't just let people up there to do that.
And there's also a separate one that's more of a people mover.
Yes, they call that the Fanboni. And even though it looks like an ice resurfacing machine, actually the ice resurfacing components of it have been removed, and so it just looks like that. And the compartment where all of the old ice is sucked up into, and then where the tanks of water that lay down the new water surface that freezes are. That entire huge compartment in the front of the machine, it has instead been turned into traveling, like a convertible car, where it's got padded seats and you can walk up in there and they can fit about 10 or 12 people in there maximum. And then they drive them around and they get, we call it the best seat in the house, because you get this experience that you wouldn't get to have any other time, riding around in a Zamboni, on the ice, looking at all of the fans looking at you.
So how would someone get that right?
Actually, it can be arranged. No, we do those rides. We do them by request. So if someone really wants to do that, they can call the Winterhawks office, and we'll try and get them scheduled to do one, to do a game if they'll be there.
Yeah, it's important that they be there before they ride it.
Right, exactly. but it also is something that also is kind of offered as a perk to, I think, some of our sponsors, and advertising is, as with any other major sport, advertising is a driving force. So we offer a lot of special little perks to our advertising partners, as you can imagine. And so sometimes them and their families will be the ones driving around, riding around in it and stuff.
Before we actually talk about last night's game, there was the bigger screen and the kiss cam.
Yes, that's right. First of all, the big screen in this building was replaced, I believe, about 2 years ago. And at that time, it was the largest permanent HD screen in a building anywhere. Unlike a Jumbotron, which first of all is not HD, and secondly, most of those are portable. This is the permanent scoreboard that's in this building. So it is a beautiful, beautiful thing to be able to look up there and to see these crisp images and replays, just like you would watch on television on your big screen at home. Of what you just saw out on the ice. And so one of the things that makes its way up onto the big screen when we're in that building is the kiss cam. The kiss cam, we do that every game when we're in that building. The other building, this scoreboard, we don't have a high-tech video for that at all. And so you wouldn't even be able to really recognize people because the resolution is
so look at those pixels kissing.
exactly. It's like, it's either that or someone put their Atari 2600 video game up on the screen. But, you can't really tell what's going on exactly. But in the Moda Center, that's all in crisp HD. You get to see Average Joe and Average Jane locking lips during the kiss cam, and they just go around to random couples. These people don't know in advance that they're going to be on the big screen, they go around to random couples in the arena, and sometimes the couples that they come upon are not actually couples. sometimes they'll get somebody who's actually maybe the person on the other side of them is the person that they're with that day. Or maybe sometimes you can see them mouthing, no, it's my brother or it's my sister or whatever. So those things happen. And then some people just don't want to kiss on camera. But most people will. Once they realize they're on the big screen and all the pressure's on them, most people will give at least a sweet little kiss.
I know there was a couple last night. They looked like they were on their computers. they showed them, they went to someone else, they came back, they showed them again, they still didn't realize that they were on the screen.
Right, right. They were still on their computers. They were completely oblivious to what was going on. We see that. We see it fairly often where someone doesn't see themselves right away because maybe they're not actively watching. But usually there'll be someone that's sitting right around them that is watching. They'll be able to kind of tap them on the shoulder or something. In this case, it was this couple, and there were just empty seats around them. I guess everyone else had gone out to get a beer at intermission or something. And, they had no one to alert them until someone finally came over and did, I think.
Because not only is there a kiss cam, sometimes there's like general footage of people in the crowd and you recognize yourself and you wave at the camera and go, hey, I'm on TV.
Absolutely, absolutely. That is part of this whole new style rock and roll fan experience, is that not only in an audio sense, but in a video sense, just like on MTV or anything else that you're watching on TV nowadays, you're being bombarded with images. And so you don't want those images to be static and boring. You don't want just a logo sitting up there when you can show people in the audience. And you show people in the audience on the big screen in an arena where there are several thousand people. And that's pretty exciting to them. For some people talk about that years afterwards. It's fun and funny. But to some people, that is a huge, huge deal, getting up on the big screen. They're famous for a few seconds. Yeah. And so it's really cool.
So, of course, the game last night, a lot tighter than the previous two games.
That's right. That's right. It's the second time that the Winterhawks have played Vancouver this year. And although Vancouver's record has not been great, I think they match up with our team in a different way than most teams do. Vancouver's a very physical team. And they also they play a style of hockey that is more... I guess you would say it's more defensively oriented. It's more controlled. The style of hockey that the Winterhawks play is very, I would say, highlight reel oriented. Yeah. Lots of crazy passes and guys breaking up the ice and, you know, passing the defenders and going one-on-one against the goalie and, you know, scoring goals in that way. Vancouver's style is much more methodical, and that's something that when you have a very big physical team, they can just pretty much kind of keep you out of the offensive zone as much as possible, and that keeps you from scoring goals. So it's a legitimate strategy. I think that's one of the reasons. But Vancouver has matched up with Portland pretty well, and it was, you may remember the scores better than I do. Let's see, last night it was...
5-2, I think.
Well, yes, the final was 5-2. I'm trying to think of the way that the scoring went. Portland scored a goal.
Vancouver, I think, actually got on the board first.
That's right. Vancouver got on the board first, and then Portland scored two goals in the first period, right? And then Portland scored... No, no one scored in the... Did anyone score in the second period?
I'm trying
to remember. That's funny. I see so many games, and we've had three games in the past 4 nights. So, it eventually ended up that Portland had a 2-1 lead, and then that lead eventually became 3-1. And then Vancouver came back and scored, and it was 3-2. And so it was very close. Vancouver, a number of times, sent shots toward the goal that were off the post, as they say, where you can hear them ringing off the pipe that is the the border of the goal. That's not a sound that a hockey player wants to hear, because it means their shot was really, really close but did not make it in.
I think the goaltender would want to hear that noise more than...
Yes, you know. Exactly. Yeah, the goaltender loves that noise because that means a puck didn't get into the goal usually. But Vancouver had a number of shots that were so close, and Portland was able to keep them from scoring that. And then very late in the third period, Portland scored a goal to make it 4-2. And a two-goal lead is very difficult to overcome when it's very late in the game. And so then Vancouver, with about 2.5 minutes left or so, did something that you hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
And wondered about. They pulled their goalie, which is an option that hockey teams have. You are allowed to have six players out on the ice, and those can be any six players that you would like. I suppose you could maybe put two goalies. Probably couldn't put two goalies out there. I don't know.
That might be illegal.
Yeah, that's probably illegal. But it's certainly confusing. At any rate. But you can take your goalie out and put an extra offensive player or defenseman in there. And so when a team is behind by one or two goals, usually in the last minute or two of the game, if they get the puck out of their defensive zone, then usually they will send the goalie off the ice. And, of course, that's one of the things about ice hockey that people may not understand. Ice hockey is the only major sport where the substitutions occur actually in the middle of play. So there are no stoppages to substitute players in and out. So while the offensive players are passing the puck around in the offensive zone, the goalie is sprinting on his skates over to the bench so that another offensive player can come onto the ice, and then you have a goal that's completely unprotected. It's, of course, a high-risk move, but you have nothing to lose if it doesn't work, because then you've lost by two or three goals instead of by one or two goals. When you get an extra offensive player on the ice, sometimes it does give you that edge that you need, that extra person that you can pass the puck to, who's not blocked, and who may be able to fire that past the goaltender and tie the game up. So
a pretty good weekend for me and a pretty good weekend for the Winterhawks. But how do you go as the announcer if the team's not going so well?
That's interesting, because for me, loving this job as much as I do, there is a real personal investment, of course, in this team and in not only the work that I do for the team and the fans that I interact with, but also in just the team itself and how it's doing. And if the team is not doing well, or if the team has just had a game that was, you know, a crushing disappointment of some kind, if, say, they've, you know, lost by several goals and, you know, just it was kind of demoralizing, or if, say, they were ahead and then the other team came back and won in the last few seconds or something. That happens a few times every season, and I've been really fortunate. It hasn't happened a lot to the teams that I've been announcing for, because our teams have been very good the last few years. But when it still happens to every team, and when it does, I would say that I kind of fall back on a certain level of professionalism, where you kind of go into autopilot mode.
Yeah.
You kind of go into autopilot, slightly smiling, happy announcer mode, where you're not really smiling inside. Everyone knows you're not really smiling inside, but you're announcing this information in the way that you need just to disseminate it, and then everyone can go home and cry into their beer.
You included.
Me included, exactly. So it does involve me kind of suppressing some emotions and maintaining my own composure and having to be professional. And I would say that is even more so the case. For instance, when a referee makes what seems like a horrible call, or a referee doesn't make a call when it seems like there obviously should have been one. And maybe if the other team scores a goal after that happens. Something like that can be infuriating, and fans can be screaming and, you know, screaming down at the refs, and, you know, you just get this sense in the building that people are really, really upset and really angry. And I'm sitting there watching the game, and generally I'm really upset and really angry too, because if that many people are upset, there's probably some substance to the criticism. That can be even more difficult. And I cannot tell you how many times, I probably shouldn't say this, but hey, it's just me and the microphone and you, yeah. Eric, right? Okay. So I cannot tell you how many times that I have wanted, in a situation like that, that has led to an opponent scoring a goal right after a bad call or right after a non-call that should have been a call. Like, I cannot tell you how many times that I have wanted to announce the referee as one of the persons who got an assist on that goal. You know, scored by number 17, you know, with assists to number 33, number 21, and number 008 in the zebra stripe uniform, you know. And obviously that would be extremely professional, and I would be fired immediately if I were to ever do anything that, like that. But it is that natural inclination, because I'm as much of a fan as anybody else on that level.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, please rise for the Zamboni! For the Zambonis.
Sharpened their skates, jumped in the bus and headed west.
Denver, Colorado, hadn't seen hockey since 70-something and the Colorado Rockies. They were all headed for a big surprise when Lord Stanley's Cup would hit home ice.
Get away from the Avalanche! Get away, here come the Avalanche!
Thank you.
Just a minute. Don't hang up. Hello.
AKFM Australia starts now.
You'll have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
So many years, all people are listening to music, and they like it, but only few of us know
that music is
life is life is.
AKFM Australia is another podcast of mine where I showcase independent and unsigned music from Australia. As you are hearing in between breaks in play during the periods here on Irk to the Penalty Box, and also at the end of the show, AKFM Australia is released each and every Friday featuring unsigned and independent bands from around Australia. And what I'm trying to do with this podcast, I am trying to cross-promote, and I am also trying to expose the musicians here to a whole new audience. If you would like any further information about any of the bands that you hear, you can go to irktothepenaltybox.com, which is a part of Channel Irk. Let's continue on from our second intermission. We are going into the third period. As we wrap up our discussion with Sean the Pipes Norris.
Because I noticed, like, Winterhawk score, you know, there's lots of noise, yes. There's TNT and everything like that, and then the other team score, and it's like, oh, gee, the other team scored. Awesome. Yay.
Right. Yes, that is that. That's that, minimum level of professionalism that we have to maintain. So,
but even with the crowd, I noticed
with the crowd, absolutely, absolutely. And I would say that my, it's one of those chicken and egg kind of things. My enthusiasm feeds the crowd, and the crowd's enthusiasm feeds me. And the way that I make announcements, and in much the same way, if the crowd is dejected or upset, I'm probably feeling that as well. And so there is definitely a, I guess the best word to use probably would be sobriety. I'm not allowed to act upset on the mic. I'm not allowed to be angry or to be really sad, but I can certainly talk in a way that is measured, and that lets people know, I think, that I'm feeling the same thing that they are, but I have a job to do, and that's what I'm doing.
But, for instance, when the Winterhawks win the championship, that's totally different.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, the Winterhawks score a goal, the Winterhawks are going on a power play, the Winterhawks win a game, the Winterhawks win a playoff series, and the Winterhawks win a championship. Yes, I mean, those are, every single one of those is, I go nuts. I go to some degree, the team pays me to go nuts on the mic. They want to hear someone who is so excited and enthusiastic about what's happening. And for me, it's genuine. I mean, I love this team. I love my job. I love watching them and watching them have success. And I do feel like in some small way that I kind of get to be a part of that success.
Are you conscious, like, let's say that the final game of the championship necessarily be here?
Here in Portland?
Yeah.
No. In fact, the championship that we won this past year, the final game actually was in Edmonton. We were playing Edmonton. Edmonton does have a franchise again. After their franchise moved to Portland, then about 20 years later, they started another franchise. So there is another franchise in Edmonton, if you were having that question. And they are the Edmonton Oil Kings again. Yeah. So anyway, but... so we played Edmonton in the finals, the league finals, the last 2 years, and we lost to them. In fact, we lost in game seven in Edmonton, 2 years ago. That was games, it's the best of seven series, and so game seven of the finals is the way it is in any sport, I think. You know, it's the pinnacle. It's what you fight for. You want to get there, and then you want to go, and you want to do your very best, and you want to win that thing. And we didn't win that thing, and that was I was really – we had played in the finals actually the year before that as well. We didn't play Edmonton, but we lost that finals on home ice, and that felt horrible because I knew that we were all about to go home for four and a half months. We weren't going to see each other again, me and the fans, you know, the thousands of people that are there, the team out on the ice. This is the last chance that you get to see this thing that you've been rooting for and this thing that you've watched grow over the last year, and it's not going to be the same the next year. You may be very successful, but you're not going to have all the same players back. You know, it's going to be a different experience. And so there's that that kind of immediate sense of, especially if it happens the way it did that year, where we lost by one goal and it looked like we were going to win that game and we ended up losing and lost the whole championship. You know, it's this immediate sense of profound loss. In the same sense, we've not won a championship on home ice since I've been there, so I can't say what it's like to win the overall championship, but we did win some of the playoff series at home. So, for instance, the Western Conference Finals we won at home, which leads into the championship series. And that was incredible. It was an incredible feeling. As loud as I yelled and as excited as I was, the crowd yelled even louder and was even more excited. It was really amazing. I hope we get to do a championship here at home.
Are you conscious of the fact that your voice could be on the highlights reels?
I'm a little bit conscious of that. More so after the fact. When I'm in the moment, I'm in that performer mode, and it's all about what's happening in the building and in my performance right now, kind of thing. But I am cognizant of that afterwards. You know, you were telling me earlier about all the ESPN channels and things that you have there from the U.S. And our team's been on SportsCenter a couple of times, you know, just a little clip here and a little clip there, you know. And I think it's pretty natural for me to kind of wonder, you know, if it's our guy scoring a goal or whatever, if I'm going to hear my audio over the top of that, you know, that kind of thing. It's kind of interesting because I notice now when I'm watching sports on TV how much I hear the public address announcer in the building, how much they pipe that in, especially, you know, if the home team's just scored a goal, you know, you hear that excitement, you hear the announcement of the goal and the assists and those kinds of things. And you kind of hear that in the background, and previously it was just kind of another type of background noise, but now I understand that from a very personal perspective. So I think it's definitely something that I think about from time to time. Not all the time, and I certainly am not tailoring my performance to that by any means. It's really all about the fans in the building. That's what it's all about.
Brace yourself, this won't go without a fight. Disentangle your life as the patience runs dry.
And then, of course, you've got like an announcement that you had to make last night. Some car left the lights on.
I think it had been 3 or 4 years since I've had to make an announcement about someone leaving their lights on. It's logistically, this was before the game. If it had been during the game, we probably would not have made the announcement. Because once we're in the middle of a game, it's really just all about the game and what's going on and the team and all the promotions and all that kind of stuff. Since it was before the game, things are a little bit more lax. We have a little more leeway to do things. And, yeah, someone had left their lights on. Someone came and told us about it. I announced it in the building, and it reminded me of a high school gymnasium or something, you know, or church or something, you know, where someone makes that announcement up in the front of the room, you know, whoever drives the white Taurus, you know. It felt very amateurish, probably sounded that way to a lot of people, but it was kind of funny.
And then, of course, you might have lost children.
I am the dog. I'm watching you with it.
You know, any marriage proposals?
Yes, actually. We have a number of marriage proposals every season. Oftentimes, the way it's done is we do it during our announcements section, where we're announcing happy birthday to so-and-so, or such and such a group is here in attendance tonight. Oftentimes, the very last announcement will be... you know, Phyllis, will you marry me, Bob, you know, or whatever. And I read those announcements aloud as people are seeing them up on the screen. And
so are you reading that off the screen, or are you reading that off the script in front of you?
It depends which building I'm in, but generally I'm reading it off the screen. Because that has the most updated information. And so what they will do is I'll read that aloud. So I get to propose to several people a year, which is nice.
Has anyone ever said no?
Barbara, will you marry me? There have been one or two times when things looked a little bit strange or tense, or there was that hesitation kind of thing. And you just think, oh, no. Oh, no. There's one time when we had someone give what I think was kind of a non-committal answer. It wasn't a no, but it was a... it was a silence. And then it was... you just kind of saw her nod a little bit or something. And then my producer's in my ear telling me, you know, we're cutting away from them. We're not, because you don't ever want to see someone get, you want to see some, yeah. You don't ever want to see someone get rejected on the big screen. You want to see that, but you don't want to see it. You want to see it on YouTube. You don't actually want to go through that for them to go through that. So
you do have a guy in your ear?
I do. I wear a headset, and they basically they tell me what to say. I get to kind of choose how I say it, in both in inflection and phrasing. So I've got a basically a producer in my ear who is calling not only my part of the game, but is also saying when the music is supposed to play, and is saying when the lights are supposed to dim, and is the director or the producer of the entire sporting event.
Lights. Music. Action.
Winterhawks, we've just passed the halfway point of our season. Like I said, the team is really starting to gel and look really great on the ice. It's going to be hard for any team to beat us. And I say that with the team having won a championship last year. So the results kind of speak for themselves. But the The team looks really good. We will head into the playoffs starting mid-March. I think we've already clinched a playoff spot because we've got the second or third best record in the league right now. And so if we haven't clinched a playoff spot mathematically, it would be very, very unlikely that that we would not make the playoffs. So we'll start the playoffs in mid-March. If we continue to win, continue to go all the way through, that can go as far as mid-May, actually late May, run almost right up until it runs kind of concurrently with the NHL playoffs. So it's about, we have about the same type of schedule as they do. So if we go and we win the championship again, we're in playoffs for like 2 months, over 2 months solid. So that's an exciting, exciting time of the year. For me, I pretty much, I do have a day job. So the Winterhawks are not, I'm not a full-time employee of them. But in my off hours, that's often what I'm doing. I'm either at a home game doing announcing, or I'm at a sports bar with fans doing an away game party, hosting an away game party where we all watch the game together and get to cheer on the team and stuff, and as kind of a fan and team building thing. And so during the season, I'm a pretty busy guy. You know, I've got other little irons in the fire, other little projects, but hockey pretty much dominates my extra time during the season.
How many home games are we roughly looking at per season?
Home games, there are 36 home games a season. And then in the playoffs, you've got four rounds of best of seven series. So potentially as many as 16 home games if you had home ice advantage and went to seven games in every one of those series. But more often, if you go all the way through to the championship finals, I think the last 2 years, I think we played 11 1 year and 12 home games the other year. So between that and some kind of, you know, preseason training camp games, those types of things, we play about 50 games at home a year.
So how can we find you online, and how can we follow the fortunes of the Winterhawks from afar?
Well, I certainly would love anyone who's interested to friend me on Facebook. I do have an account that's kind of my professional account. And so that's at facebook.com/NorrisWinterhawks. Norris like Chuck.
You've never heard that before, I'm sure.
I'm sure I've never heard that before. I just tell people that now because otherwise people think I'm saying like Morris, like the cat. So that's my Facebook. My Twitter is @HawksPipes. I tweet about the team. Sometimes I tweet about other things. Usually I'm tweeting about where I'm headed to a road game party and, you know, hoping people show up and that kind of thing, little promotional things. But I tweet about other things on that account as well.
And obviously you don't have time to tweet during the game.
Obviously. my phone is usually on during the game, and I am usually, you know, using that to communicate sometimes with team-related stuff. Occasionally, I've been known, if I have a few minutes, say, in an intermission after I've made all my announcements and everything, and I have a few minutes to myself, to maybe throw out a little tweet about how the team is doing or something like that. But for the most part, no. For the most part, I'm not live-tweeting the game.
But I know the Winterhawks account, they are certainly quick when they score a goal.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a media professional on staff who does the public relations and all the media stuff for the Winterhawks, and he is there on Twitter just tweeting all throughout the game and letting you know when the Winterhawks score. That account is @PDXWinterhawks, and it's a great follow. He's got a great sense of humor, as well as giving you all the information on the team. And if you are just becoming a hockey fan, or if you're a hockey fan but don't have a specific team to root for, be a Winterhawks fan. It's a great organization.
Mate, it's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much. I've really appreciated this. I feel like I kind of talked your ear off. Did I break that machine?
Nah, it's still good.
All right, good. Well, I appreciate the opportunity, and I've had a lot of fun with you this weekend. It's been a really great time, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
And the funny thing is, thanks to Polly, I had no idea this was going to happen, but all good.
There you go. Your entire weekend was transformed into a hockey and crazy social experience, I guess. So, yeah, it's good. I like it when life happens like that. Oh, there we go.
Sorry, neighbors.
More cowbell. No. Yeah. So there's your souvenir from one of your souvenirs from the Winterhawks game. You can just watch for the PDX Winterhawks tweets, and whenever we score, you can shake that.
Awesome. Thanks, Matt. It's been fun.
Absolutely. Thanks, Eric.
I hope you have enjoyed the conversation between myself and Sean the Pipes Norris, the arena announcer for the Portland Winterhawks in the Western Hockey League. As I mentioned at the end of last week's episode, the Portland Winterhawks had an absolutely epic season. I got to see three of their games live in Portland, and also I tuned in regularly to the live stream, the live audio commentary during the season, and during the championship season, I also watched the games via a live stream as well. The Western Hockey League has now finished, and the National Hockey League, the NHL, is wrapping up at the time of recording. So when those two seasons start again, I'll be able to talk more about them. But indeed, as you would have figured out by now, there is also an Australian Ice Hockey League, which I have been heavily involved in since returning to Australia. On next episode, episode 3 of Eric to the Penalty Box, we'll talk about how I found the Australian League and some of the experiences that I have had during that time, between the time that I arrived back home in Australia. Thank you again to the Zambonis for providing our intermission music and also the theme music. You can check out the Zambonis. There is a link on the show notes at irktothepenaltybox.com. And I'm also encouraging people to do a Zamboni chant on video and film it so I can forward it to the Zambonis. Get around your Zamboni, put your club jerseys on, grab your mascot, and have an absolutely great time. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. I hope you'll enjoy the previous episodes and also the future ones as well. You can follow me on Twitter at IrkPod, where you'll see me during match days and also during the week talking about hockey, my travels, my work, and a lot more. We're going to take you out with some post-game entertainment as you leave the arena for the next episode. Join me next week for more adventures on my home ice. We are going to feature Domino, who are a female-fronted independent unsigned band from Sydney. They're progressive rock and also can be described as having an Arabian and Middle Eastern feel. And I'm pretty sure that the vocalist Erica can do a mean version of the Australian National Anthem as well. Anywho, I'm Eric. Don't forget to keep your stick on the ice and keep out of the penalty box. And I'll see you next week. Good night, Interweb. Here's Domino.
promise, for the promise of a new life. You
underground, I shot you.